Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts as they share with you the insider's guide to property investing.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, the insider's guide to property investing. I'm Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel. And he's Ben Kingsley, the chair of the Property Investment Professionals of Australia and the Property Investment Advisor of the Year. How are you, mate?
G'day, mate. How are you?
Good, thanks. Good to see our sitting Prime Minister. Lasted for a week.
It's good. A whole week, I know. We're talking about who the next one's going to be. So that's Scott Morrison, isn't it?
No doubt. But, mate, we talked a couple, maybe 5-10 podcasts ago, how we spent some time in Adelaide.
Yes.
And we were lucky enough to travel around with arguably the Prince of Adelaide, who knows everything about property over there. And we're lucky enough to have him as the guest today on the podcast, Peter Koulizos, which is not easy to say. How are you, Peter?
I'm very good, thank you, Bryce.
That's good. You're also known as the property professor.
Yes. A real professor, but the fact that I teach in property research, won some teaching awards, so I've got that nickname. Yeah. So please don't call me Professor Koulizos, but the property professor.
was it a journalist who gave you the tag, or was it just, how did it evolve?
Some radio DJs in Adelaide. Okay, yeah. Yeah, they said, oh, some property professor spoke last night and said such and such. It's just stuck. So
perfect.
Well, yeah. I think it's perfect for you. Peter has got a very, very fair pedigree. He's the author of two books. The first one was The Top Australian Suburbs, A Guide for Investors and Home Buyers. And then you got together with a mate of yours at TAFE, I believe, who's in the shares camp, and you're in the property camp, and you guys boxed it out in book form and talked about the pros and cons.
We did. So property versus shares. I wrote it with Zach Zachariah, who runs the share investment course at TAFE,
and I
just run the property investment course. So, yeah, as you say, we boxed it out in the book.
Who won?
You have to read the book.
Very good.
So
very,
do yourself a favour, go and check those two books out. They're great reads.
Very true. Now, Ben, it was a fact that when we were travelling around in Adelaide with Peter in the car, it seemed like every second property, Peter said, our family owns that. So it's fair to say that he's got some experience.
Well,
he's got some experience, but also through generations. So we're pretty keen. We let our listeners know lots of principles and frameworks about property investing, and you've done it yourself. You've invested, you've developed, you've taught, you've written about it, so I think there's lots to talk about. So anything you want to kick off with today in terms of maybe some of the lessons that were passed on through the generations about why you should be investing in property in the first place?
Yep. I got into property because my father was a real estate agent, so I grew up with property. And, I mean, Dad was always telling me buy property, but as a young lad who listens to their father, I was too busy, you know, playing football.
Everything when we're younger.
That's right. I say the same to my kids. Oh, I forgot. Sorry, you're 17 years old. You know everything.
Still know everything, yeah.
So I didn't invest until my late 20s, but I learnt a lot of lessons, not that Dad set out deliberately to teach me explicitly, but just like through a process of osmosis, I learnt about what makes a good property. Dad was very much into buying property, fixing it up and selling it. So not only was he selling real estate for other people, but he was actually investing in it himself. And my father came to Australia when he was 25 with virtually no money and certainly no English.
Yep.
Worked until he was 35 in a factory, but then studied part-time while he was working in the factory and got his real estate license.
Great.
And by the time he was 45, he retired on property.
Wow.
Because he'd bought enough property at the right time that he had an income stream that allowed him to give up selling real estate. So dear old Dad passed away a couple of years ago. So he actually was retired for more years than he was working.
Wow.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
So a lot of people talk about this 10-year, you know, you can retire in 10 years. Do you think today that's still true?
In a low inflation, low interest rate environment, we are going to find it harder to do. Having said that, Sydney has increased 70% in the last 8 years.
Mm.
Now, it might do 100% in the 10 years since the GFC.
Yep.
So that's yet to be seen, but it was certainly a lot easier, Ben, during the 70s and the 80s when we had double-digit inflation and double-digit interest rates and property was, you know, zooming ahead.
And off a low base.
Yeah, that's
right. Whereas it's easy to get a compounding nature on 100 grand to 200,000, but, you know, 1 million to 2 million, debts involved in that. So I'm not a believer of that. And obviously we've spoken about, you know, you're in it for the long term.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to be a passive investor, you know, invest for the long term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I agree.
So you mentioned your dad passive. Was that all investing in Adelaide?
Yes. Dad was also very much into holiday homes. So we had a number of holiday homes in some very lovely coastal locations. So it wasn't just Adelaide, but it was in holiday locations close to Adelaide, like Victor Harbour, on the York Peninsula. We had a hobby farm on the Fleurieu Peninsula as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that sort of flies in the face of, if you talk about a lot of sentiment around Adelaide, it'd be fair to say that the majority of sentiment is not to be investing in Adelaide unless you live there. But your dad's a living example of that it can be done. And it'd be fair to say that your portfolio is largely South Australian based. So what do you say to the people who say that there's no money to be made in Adelaide?
Well, I mean, if you do the stats, you'll see that Adelaide, Brisbane and Melbourne for the last 12 years have performed for about the same. They've grown, I think, 180% over 12 years. And even though all the talk at the moment is about Sydney, Sydney's been the worst performing capital city over the last 12 years. Mm. So providing, and it's not just about picking the right city, providing you can pick the right property within the right suburb in the right city, then you can do very well. Mm. I know some friends that have done particularly well by investing in Sydney or Melbourne, not so much in Perth, unfortunately, because they're going backwards at the moment.
But that's a time thing. And if you're in it for the long term, you know, but there is definitely an argument around timing the market.
Certainly.
I mean, the research is getting better and you should be able to sort of buy counter-cyclical, which is obviously what we're trying to do, isn't it?
Well, the cabbie that I had that brought me here today was saying he bought a house 5 years ago. For the first 4 years, it did nothing. But just in the last 8 months, he's gone up 10%.
Yeah. There you go.
That's an important point for the listeners because we always, historically stuff doubles every 7 to 10 years, but not linearly. It's usually periods of flatness and then there's a sharp period of booming. And that's what I'm finding. We're buying a lot of property in Brisbane and we're finding we're paying the price that people back in 2008 and 2007 were paying. Mm. We're paying for it now. So there's two people, same property, have a different story. Fast forward 2 or 3 years from now, we think that our client's going to go, geez, I had a really great experience buying in Brisbane. Yeah. The person who we bought it from said, there's no money to be made in property, you should never do it.
Yeah.
The one I bought in North Queensland last year, you know, the person who bought it in 2007 paid $232,000 for it and I bought it for $150,000.
Mm.
So exactly that, you know, and it's all about the timing of the market and the science that lives behind it, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Any quirks in Adelaide? I remember when we were there with you and you talked to us about whether or not you need to be near public transport. You said,
nah.
If I need to go somewhere, I'll be able to park out the front.
That's right. In Adelaide, if we can't find a park out the front of where we want to go, we'll just keep driving around the block until somebody pulls out and we park there.
And no need for coins because you don't have meters. You're that far behind.
No, we do have meters, but we don't have toll roads.
Good point.
And we only need coins for our parking meters, unlike Sydney, where you don't worry about coins, you just flash
put
your credit card
on there because it's so expensive per hour.
So, I mean, that's a good point. So Sydney and Melbourne, critical to be near public transport, more so in Sydney, especially a train station. In Adelaide, most people drive.
Yep.
Being close to public transport is not such a big deal. Mm.
What about the trend towards, obviously we know in Melbourne and Sydney and Brisbane now, it's the walk score. It's that ability to basically leave the car because of the congestion component and being able to walk to amenity. Whether it be not so much school, parents are happy to get in the car and drive 5 or 10 minutes to drop the kids off to school, but that amenity down to the restaurant, the coffee shop, to get their bacon and eggs on Saturday morning and read the paper, are we starting to see a trend like that in Adelaide?
Yeah, and what's also important in Adelaide, other than the cafes and the restaurants, is the beach.
Yep.
Now, our beaches aren't as glorious as Sydney's, but we flock to the beaches summer and winter, even if it's just to walk along the beach, take the dog, or have a coffee by the beach. So for us, I mean, one of my key principles to buying property is proximity to the CBD, but in Adelaide, proximity to the beach is also really important.
I agree. I mean, you know, I've been researching Adelaide like you have, Peter, for, well, not as long as you have, but our initial assessment of Adelaide was a difficult one because it wasn't this traditional CBD and this sort of vibration or ring, you know, that would roll out. And so you sort of saw your pockets right around the CBD do that. What we actually saw, because the makeup of the employment in that area was different. There wasn't that basically latte sipping society en masse, because the CBD wasn't necessarily the funnel of all major income earning. There was obviously good manufacturing opportunities, some mining opportunities. So those people chose to live coastal because also there wasn't that congestion story as well. But I think you're getting there. I mean, I think with the Adelaide Oval redevelopment and what's happening with the research hospital and the university upgrades, that there's a real buzz around the city areas, and I think we're going to see that sort of start to happen a bit more.
Yeah, look, I'm in Victoria today. I'm from South Australia. There is a huge rivalry between us, but the one
is it just because Dangerfield's going to Geelong or something else?
He's been very good to us, by the way. So if he goes to Geelong, good luck to him. But for whatever your political persuasion, back in the 90s when each of our state banks collapsed and we both went into recession, you had Jeff Kennett. We did not.
Yeah.
You know, Jeff Kennett, South Bank, Docklands, major infrastructure. We went to austerity.
Yeah.
And like it's taken us 10, 15 years to get out of that.
Yeah.
But as you said, and as you saw when you came to Adelaide, just on North Terrace itself, extension to the convention centre, the new hospital, Adelaide Uni is building their medical school right next door to the new hospital. The University of South Australia is building their new cancer research centre right next door to that. There's proposed for further development on the riverbank, Adelaide Oval. It's all happening.
It's starting to bring a bit of vibe, and I totally agree, Pete. I think there's, and you know, they're all types of employment that bring six-figure salaries with them.
Oh yeah.
So you know, that's going to obviously mean that the good stock is going to be well sought by those types of people. So there's always blue chip country in any city and even any regional town. And so it's about tapping into that as opposed to maybe speculating on the fringe stuff, where you take less risk but potentially more upside, because we're human beings. We want to be associating with like-minded people. We want to network with those like-minded people. We want to feel safe in the suburb that we live in. So that's a big part of it. You know, we've often talked about owner-occupier appeal. Well, that's the message there. You know, as investors, we want to get on their coattails. Yep.
Dead right.
One of the things we asked you to help us with when we went to Adelaide is, besides giving us the bigger picture macro view, we wanted to get down and see some bricks and mortar, and you made a comment to us that you don't recommend anyone invest in apartments. And then we turned up to what we would call an apartment, a 1970s style apartment, which you would call a flat.
That's right.
Which sort of brought out the differences between the terminology between cities. But you've got a really strong view around apartments, to your definition in Adelaide. You want to tell the listeners?
Yeah, sure. Look, my definition of an apartment is a relatively modern, high-rise, small dwelling. Whereas flats and units we would call low to medium-rise, generally built in the 60s or 70s, possibly 80s. So the big difference is apartments, there's a high rise and there's a lot of them in a relatively small area of land, whereas what we call flats and units, there's less of them and they're on relatively larger blocks of land. So the key there is the land component. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of new apartments. One, they have a very limited land component. And if property has two components, which is land and building, land appreciates in value, buildings depreciate in value. The other one, if we look at an economic principle, is demand and supply. In my opinion, places like Melbourne and Brisbane are soon going to have an oversupply of apartments, because it's not like you build one apartment here and one apartment there. It's 300 here and 400 over there. So very quickly, you can get into an oversupply situation with apartments, unlike you can with houses. So we've got an oversupply issue, a limited land component, and in particular brand new. Just like a brand new car, people will pay top dollar when it's brand new, but next year or the year after, it's not brand new anymore. So what you'll find it, and I've done the research not just in Adelaide but all over the country, traditionally people that have to sell within the first 5 or 6 years of purchasing a brand new apartment have to sell it for less than what they paid for. So, and that's not a good strategy if you're looking to invest in property and create wealth. I could go on, because then we've got high body corporate fees. You know, even though you're on the ground floor, you're still paying for the lift that everybody else uses. Or you don't use the gym, but your tenant does, so you're going to pay for the maintenance of that. And the spa and the sauna and the swimming pool, yeah.
Because the sting in the tail is also the interest that you're paying. So even though you might have really strong depreciation, everyone thinks, oh, great, I'll go and buy this for a depreciation outcome. But the reality is when you sell it, that's added back.
It is.
You know, into your capital costs. So people don't realise that even if there has been a small amount of appreciation, you're going to pay tax on that. So depreciation's great from a cash flow point of view, and it's brilliant if you can hold the property indefinitely. But if you've got to turn these things over, you get a big sting in the tail in terms of the interest cost. You know, that's the big one for me. And then the grand one is the opportunity cost. Mm. You know, I was in that property for 5 years, it did nothing. And then I hear these great stories of someone who's bought something down the road and doubled their money. Mm. So it comes back to, you know, again, listeners, it comes back to asset selection and being smart about it.
I think it's a good point for the listeners, you know, what Peter said. We've said it in various forms previously, but it's 6 to 7 years to go back to break even. Mm. And I always say, if people put that in context, if they make a decision to invest for the first time when they're, say, 41, and then 7 years down the track, they're 48, they realise they're break even, they can't get those years back. And the closer they are to 50, the more risk that they, well, the less risk that they want to take on. So challenging to get that lesson learned in hindsight, because I always think that the most dangerous part of the market to get your information from is the brand new section. Yep. That's where most of the press and most of the people who have got silver tongues tend
the
to...
The Spruikers? Well, we can call them that, can't
we? Yeah, we've done a podcast on Spruikers. Yeah.
So, Pete, what are some of the principles or golden rules that you've invested by, you know, and that you've learned over your journey?
Yep. For me, location is the key.
Yep.
Never compromise on location. Even if you're looking to buy, fix up and sell, people will still pay a premium for location.
Yep.
So if you're in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne or Sydney or Adelaide or coastal suburbs of Sydney or Perth, people will pay a premium because of its location. And the reason why it's so important in property is because you can never change location. You can change the size of the house. You can change the look of the property. You can change the size of the land. You can either subdivide it, or if you've got enough money, you can buy the block next door. But you can never change where it is. That's why you need to get your macro location right,
yep,
capital city and suburb,
yep,
and your micro location. That is the right street. Like, you don't want to be picking
a localized neighborhood.
That's right.
Right,
you don't want to be picking a great suburb, but then buy on the main road.
Yep.
A residential property. Commercial property is a different story.
Yep.
So for me, never compromise on a location.
So based on that, can I throw something here? A TV sure. show called Location, Location, Location Australia. Do you reckon they might catch on?
I reckon you might have something there, Brock. Yeah.
Very good.
What else you got for us?
Value in real estate's in the land. Yep. As I said earlier, land is made up of two components, land and building. If I can give it a simple example that I would give in class, you've got the option to spend $500,000. So you can buy an older style house on a relatively large block, or you can buy a brand new apartment, right? So for $500,000, if you're going to buy the older property, even if the house wasn't on there, the land is still worth $450,000, let's imagine. But if you buy the brand new apartment, because it's on a relatively small allotment of land, that's only worth $100,000. Then because building high rise is quite expensive, the building cost itself might be 300. So 100 plus 300 equals 500.
Terrific. And
now you haven't done your maths.
That's for the developer's profit, you know, the Spruikers profit.
Yeah, sorry.
So that other 100,000 is in the developer's pocket.
Yep.
So if property appreciates in value, then if you bought the brand new apartment, you've only got $100,000 of your 500 appreciating in value. $300,000 is depreciating in value and the other 100 has disappeared for good. Whereas if you would buy the older style property on a reasonable sized block, you've got 450 out of your 500,000 increasing in value and only 50,000 is depreciating. The value in real estate is in the land. You need to make sure that when you're buying a property, the vast majority of your funds are going towards the land component. And it doesn't mean a big block of land. Mm. Like a small block in Toorak in Melbourne, let's say a 200 square metre block in Toorak in Melbourne is going to sell for more than a 1,000 square metre block.
Out
maybe
the bush.
Out in the bush.
In the greenfield areas.
Yeah.
So what I mean by terrific before, We've referred to this as land to asset ratio.
Yep.
Do you refer to it as that?
Yeah.
And do you have any principles that you work on in terms of percentages?
70%.
Okay, so mine's 60.
Okay.
So I'll go as low as 60 because in some really blue chip areas of Melbourne and Sydney, you got it.
Yeah.
You know, because ultimately the value is still there. And, you know, you can't necessarily get that really old home. The home might have some character appeal about it and that pushes it at that little bit lower. Yep. So that's a good message there around 60 to 70%. If you're getting 60 to 70% of your land content in the overall value, then it's a trigger for further research and, you know, it's past one of those ticks, hasn't it?
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned character because, like economics, demand and supply, they're not making any more original Californian bungalows or Victorian or Edwardian-style homes. So similar to a car, often vintage cars sell for more than what they did when they were brand new because of their scarcity.
Yep.
So, yeah, land component and character.
So as an extension of that, obviously, for me, it's land value is more important than land content.
Yes.
And I think that's an extension of your point because another example, an extension of your example is I always say if you've got $500 to spend and you could buy what we both consider as a great flat, for example, a 70s apartment in a beautiful tree-lined street close to the city, I can pay $500 versus going out to a greenfield and paying $500. A large percentage of my $500 on the apartment is going towards the land component and a small percentage is going towards the building versus the flip side. So I think that's a spot that a lot of investors can get around the wrong. They can actually misread what you say and say, Peter said I've got to buy land content, so therefore that's all it is.
Yeah.
It's land content in association with land value.
Yep.
Correct. So for townhouses, I'm 45. So anything between sort of 40 to 50 if I need to. And then on the older style flats or older style apartments, villas, whatever we want to call them, no less than 30. Okay, because when you get to the medium and high density stuff, it's 10 to 15. That should be a trigger to say, well, of what I'm buying, even though, you know, that block of dirt in downtown Docklands in Melbourne, you know, that 800 square metres of dirt that's going to now be 16, 20 stories high, sold for $11 million, $12 million, so it's $1 million per square or whatever, that you're still getting, you know, 1/200th of that as opposed to the 1/8th of that. So that's how you can work it out. So think about it like that. Some good little rules of thumb there around land to asset ratios. Beautiful. What else have we got?
Do your own research. Unless you have a trusted property investment advisor, you need to do your own research and don't just trust what the real estate agent is telling you. Because you need to remember that the real estate agent is working for the vendor, the person that is selling. So they're going to do their best to try and sell the property. And that may not be in your best interest to just listen to what they have to say.
So, Pete, when you say that, when you say DIY your own research, are you saying that there are some people, though, that you would trust with research?
Yep.
There are obviously some sites that you can go to, you can subscribe to some good data. But if that, say, a qualified property investment advisor's got great data and great research, technically, they're going to have experience, skill, proven track record. So the average DIY is not going to be able to compete with that skill base of that professional technician, is it?
So you need to find yourself your qualified property investment advisor. There's not many of us around at the moment, but I'm sure things will continue to grow and there'll be many more people that are advising their clients on an ethical and moral and, of course, a legal basis with their best interest at heart.
And the great news about PIPA, so everyone knows that I'm chair of PIPA, is we've got a lot of people currently undertaking that course, which is great. You can be a qualified property investment advisor as a qualification. Now, most importantly is that some of those can still sell off stock lists. So if they're giving research, you've got to make sure that research is both from a macro point and also a granular level. So we're getting down to that lower level. And if they're limiting the number of options that you've got, just understand their independence. So we do have QPIAs who don't have that independent view, and there are others who charge fee for service who do have that and back it up with independent research themselves.
Yep.
And a point for the listeners, as we've said before, searching is not researching.
Correct.
Very good.
Searching is not researching. All right, another one, Pete?
Do your numbers. So again, don't just rely on the real estate agent to provide you with what rent they think you can get or what it might resell for when you fix it up. either grab some data from your state's land titles office or RP data and get some real factual information to base your numbers on, but you don't just do one set of numbers. It's not, I'm going to buy it for this, I'm going to fix it up for that, and then I can sell it for this. You have to do three sets of numbers. So you have to do a scenario analysis. So you'll do your numbers on what's probably going to happen, but then you should also do your numbers on the worst case scenario, and then you should also do your numbers on the best case scenario.
Oh, so that's great advice, Pete.
So if you're going to renovate something, the best case scenario would be, let's say you're able to source secondhand materials so you can keep your costs down, and because you're renovating a character or a period style home, somebody falls in love with it, pay top dollar. Worst case scenario is you find the tradesman from hell, takes forever to fix up, and you're selling in the middle of a slump. So if you've done your scenario analysis and in the worst case scenario you still make money, then I think that's a pretty good investment.
Yeah, look, and that's obviously an active investor. Mm. That's someone who's trying to create a return as opposed to that classic passive investor.
Yep. And any more?
One more.
Persevere.
Yeah.
If investing in property was easy, everyone would be doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, a lot of people search and search and search and they can't find, they think they can't find what they're looking for, and they say, oh, it's all too hard, and give up. But hopefully one thing that I've instilled in my students is with property, there are many, many properties for sale, but there are only some that are going to be suitable for your particular investment strategy. So you need to search and persevere and put offers in, and yes, you'll be knocked back, and put more offers in and you'll be knocked back. But once you've done your research and you've got a good idea what value is, what good value is, then you need to act quickly before others get in. And you particularly find that in a market that's moving very quickly.
Yep.
Properties sell within a matter of days.
Yeah, they do.
There you have it, folks. Top five tips from the property professor. One, location is the key. Two, the value in real estate is in the land. Number three is do your own research. Number four is do your numbers. And number five is to definitely persevere. Now, we've got lots to talk about with the property professor. We're going to take a quick break right now, and we'll come back with plenty more in a moment.